Not that like there's any such a thing as journalistic integrity anymore, but you doing a show for the playoffs ahead of a Boston game where you were wearing a Boston Celtics jersey, peak fangirling, just peak fangirling. Drop the intro. Welcome to the L. Duncan Show with aforementioned super fan. Celtic
L.
super fan, all things Boston, Gary Streisand.
L. Whoa, time out. Okay, to be fair and to be clear and to establish on the record on this multi-platform program, if we were in Milwaukee, I'd have been wearing a damn Bobby Portis jersey. All right, if we were in Dallas, all right, give me that Kyrie, give me that
Cap.
Luka. All right, if I'm in Denver, you know I'm going with slim, thick Nikola Jokic. All right, I'm just somebody who, when I go to a place, I want to immerse myself in the local culture. Okay.
Oh,
And
so you're only going to go for the home team too, is what you're saying. Like you're not going to agitate the home crowd by wearing, say, a Heat jersey. That's not something that you would do. You're only going to support the home team.
L, you know me as a dear friend, and I've never been an agitator. Okay, I'm always go with the flow. Don't go opposite the grain. I'm a lover. I'm not a fighter. All right, I bruise easily. I don't want to get punched in the face. You and I are both very familiar with how likable, loving, and welcome Boston can be to
Sure.
outsiders. So,
Yeah.
of course, I'm not going to go in a Miami Heat jersey.
I
And
love that
plus.
you're having therapy right here. I love that you're admitting to everyone, Gary, like when I walk through a crowd, I want them to love me and adore me. I want cheers. I want, yeah, let's go, my Boston brother. You want to just slide. You want to chameleon yourself. You know what I mean? You're not gonna show any love to any other team. You just want everyone to love you.
Okay, but L, let's just flip it and reverse it. Let's go a little Missy Elliott real quick. Let me put the shoe on the other foot, so to speak.
Sure.
Would you rather go into every situation and going into different environments? And what's the opposite? Having just everybody hate you?
I mean, it's not the worst thing in the world.
Get out of town.
Again, I've lived in Boston.
Where has Elle Duncan ever gone that she has been hated?
Boston, just for being black.
What again? Whatever.
No, I respect it. You're also a Celtics fan, so you can say as much as you want that you would support the home team jersey wherever, but you do love all things Boston. You
Sure.
spent many a time covering the Celtics when you were working for the regional network there. Boston absolutely rolls as we get into, let's get into a little like NBA playoff edition of the L. Duncan Show. By
We
the
are
way,
hoop heads.
you called him skinny thick. I love the fact that Jokic is just really leaning into being Gru from Despicable Me. He's got the
Yeah.
commercials. Then he shows up before their game with the Lakers, quite literally dressed as Gru. He said, I love the guy. I love the cartoon. Why not? Have a little bit of fun too. I'm sure he said it just like that as well.
That's exact. I actually, if you close your eyes and you said that again, I'd be like, whoa, am I doing this multi-platform program with Gru,
I love the
adoptive
guy. I
father?
love the cartoon. Why not? Have a little bit of fun too.
Oh, and this is about the time where Elle takes her Eastern European accent, and then for some reason it turns into Australian, and then it
Yes.
turns into the
That's
I
right.
and then it turns into the islands.
That's right.
You just sort of migrate yourself back to the States and then get back to Elle.
We've got a producer on right now who is named Kenny, who was a native Australian, does not have the accent anymore, but
That's
like,
right.
yeah, and working with Kenny, like always just how he would have to sort of like smile through the cringe of me doing Australian accents at him. He
Yeah.
didn't ask for it. I would just sort of drive by, do them at him. I would assault him with an Australian accent. And he's such a nice guy that he would smile through it, but I realize how horrific it was. So I want to apologize formally to you, Kenny, for doing that to you. But yeah, my accents like to take a turn. The NBA playoffs taking a turn as well. Can we give a quick shout out before we get into this pressure cooker conversation about the kids, about the babes? The kids will be all right. How about them Thunder? All right. Thunder beat the Pelicans. I know what you're thinking. Well, they're the number one seed, like they're supposed to. But 7 of the 11 Thunder players who actually took to the floor on Sunday night, Gerbert, were competing in their very first playoff game. And I thought they did well. Thought it was a big night for the Cheterosexuals. He got a huge defensive stop to help get the win. Started out super sloppy. But honestly, Gerbert, this was at least a close game. 20 lead changes in the Thunder Pelicans game, 19 lead changes in all the other 7 games combined. Ooh.
Okay, stop. You can't just blaze through Chet Holmgren's nickname as if it's just a normal nickname, L. You were just deadpan through that whole thing. Can we just quickly, before we get into the games and the box score, because that's, of course, what people want to hear us do, is let's just bring it back to the cheterosexuals. You've brought that onto SportsCenter. Yeah. Okay. You've used it so seamlessly that people probably don't even pick up on it. Elle, is that one of the all-time nicknames in recent memory?
Correct.
For you?
For a fan base? Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, what, like, we just get too cute with it. It's like, okay, you're a Swiftie. That's fine. It plays off the name, the Beehive because of Queen Bee. Like, I get it, but sometimes they just get sort of silly.
Correct.
And I think cheterosexuals is a whole entire new, it's like really elevated the game in general. I love it. It plays off his name, talks about the love of something, and it's great.
Oh, it's so good. I think going back to the actual, the hoops, I've never seen a playoff start where we're giving so much love to the top of the Western Conference standings, while also at the same time, in nearly the same breath, disrespect the top three or four teams in the Western Conference at the same time. The Thunder have proven they deserve a one seed. They are good. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, while not this year, he is an MVP finalist.
Yeah.
It's Nikola Jokic, it's Luka, and it's Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. Mm-hmm. The NBA's got to love three non-US born players being the three MVP.
They do.
Candidates.
This is why all the work to be international is important, right?
It
they
is
really
such
love
an
it.
International game, right? It's Luka, it's Nikola, and then it's Shea Gilgeous-Alexander who comes by way of America's hat. But they've been good for a long time. Chet Holmgren, also a candidate for the NBA's Rookie of the Year. We know Victor Wembanyama is going to win it. Mm-hmm. But also at the same time, people are discrediting them because they're young and because they're inexperienced. And I honestly think, L, in this situation, ignorance is sort of bliss, right? There is no pressure. I mean, the Thunder have been winning games all season long. And yes, this one was the closest one, even with the Pelicans not having Zion Williamson, and they're not going to have him for this series. So I would have liked to see the Thunder separate themselves a little bit more. But I think this is one of the most underappreciated one seeds coming out of the Western Conference in recent memory. I don't know if you agree.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I also think, to your point, yes, I think that everyone just sort of assumes that it's going to be Denver again, at the very least, to represent in the Western Conference Final. And so for a one seed, you're right in that I do think they're still sort of playing with house money. I don't even think that was the goal at the start of this year, was to be the one seed in the West. I think it was to make a playoff, maybe win a playoff series. So yeah, whenever you've got a really young team, certainly the inexperience factor always comes in. I mean, the Timberwolves were sort of that team last year, and we saw that the results from last year kind of lived up to that, which is that they were young and a bit inexperienced. So yeah, I definitely don't think they're facing a ton of pressure. But yeah, that game was a decent one. For some other games, though, because I don't think that the Thunder are under a ton of pressure. Let's put some people on the hot seat. Let's do a little temperature gauge on the pressure cooker. By the way, have you ever used a pressure cooker?
If I'm being in a moment of honesty, I'm actually scared to use a pressure cooker.
Why? You're afraid it's going to like explode in your face.
Yeah, that's exactly it, L. I use an air fryer, which is about the extent of my culinary exhibition.
Yeah.
Okay. Why are you like a pressure cooker?
We're a pressure cooker family. Sneakily, it is an incredibly useful tool in the kitchen. If you've got room for a pressure cooker, because they certainly are not small, but if you've got room, I'm telling you right now, we always make pressure cooker a negative connotation, right? This is the best way to like get your food, things that take hours to cook. You put that thing in the pressure cooker and it really helps get you there. But
can we stop down on that just real quick? Like, can you give us a real world example? Like what can you do in a pressure cooker better than you can do in like an air fryer? Let the people know this is an educational
program.
Well,
it's two totally different foods, right? Like in an air fryer, trying to cook something, you want it to be like crunchy or crispy. That's certainly not, you're not making rice in an air fryer, but some rices that take forever, you can do in a pressure cooker in 20 minutes. Some stews or like things, meat that you have to sort of let sit and boil or whatever forever, you can do in a pressure cooker in 15, 20 minutes. Oxtails, You love your Jamaican food. You don't seem like a big oxtail fan, but
chicken,
like there's all kinds
of assumptions,
chicken, you know, something that you would leave sitting in a crock pot for hours, you can get done. Imagine that. It's a pressure cooker is essentially a crock pot on crack. Like you can just get through it. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So, yeah. All right. We got there. Hell yeah.
I love that. I love that I just made a parallel between crack and a pressure cooker, but you get what I'm saying. It's just like a nitro version of a crock pot. Okay. So in this case, I think speaking of crock pots, because the first question is, are the Bucks under so much pressure that if the playoffs don't go poorly, they would part ways with Giannis? Now, yes. I want to preface this conversation, by saying these are our producers that put these questions up. You think they would part? What? First of all, what is the playoffs going poorly for the Bucks? So they need to win another championship? Is that the only, that's it for them, a championship?
They've done this to themselves, Elle. We talked about it on the last episode. No team has gotten in their own way more than the Milwaukee Bucks within this last calendar year. And it's not even with them dispatching Adrian Griffin and bringing in our former colleague and bringing in our former coworker,
Doc
Rivers, into the fold to do a worse job than Adrian Griffin, finishing with a sub 500 record. No, this goes back to them getting rid of, with no reason and no real, I guess the explanation is Dame Lillard, but clearing the way for Dame Lillard by trading Drew Holiday to the Boston Celtics, one of the best on-ball defenders in the game, so good that he is one of the 12 best players in America to represent Team USA at the Olympics. Like, them getting rid of him, and listen, Dame showed out yesterday, right? 35 points in the first half to get the Bucks that game one win against the Pacers. We were expecting fireworks. The game hit the under, but they've gotten in their way to such a degree, and I think it's laughable that it's the notion of, oh, will the Bucks have the option? I mean, obviously, Giannis, he signed to a max contract, but if there's any league that is ran by the players more than any other league, It's the NBA, and Giannis has gone on record as saying, if things don't go my way, I don't care if I have a max extension, I will force my way, not his words, but he's alluded to it, I'll remove myself from a situation if it's not a situation I want to be a part of. So contract extension be damned. If Giannis don't want to be there, he will find a way not to be there.
Well, that's why I laughed at that. Bucks will part ways with Giannis. I'm like,
that's what I'm saying.
The Bucks would drink his bathwater until he says, I'm done with you. The Bucks aren't going to part ways with anybody.
Exactly.
The Bucks have built their entire franchise around Giannis. He's been the most transformative player there since, what, Kareem? I mean, no. So that's not happening.
True.
However, I could see, yes, in a player-empowered league where Giannis would go, we're not getting any better. Now, there's a couple of things. He's hurt, okay? Mm-hmm. So they do win their first game. We're talking about pressure. They win their first game against a Pacers team that they played five times this year, that they only beat one time, and that's because Giannis had to put up a career high to do it. They were losing all of these games to the Pacers with Giannis averaging over 38 points per game in every single loss. So maybe the key here to getting past the Pacers is just letting Giannis sit, because Damian Lillard went off. But I think there's a few things that like tell me that this is not one of those years. A, the Bucks not being able to get out of their own way. You don't think they asked Giannis before they moved on from Adrian Griffin? You don't think that they asked him before they brought in Doc Rivers? Like, these are all things he has to co-sign on. So we can clutch our pearls and go, I don't like what the front office is doing. Certainly they've run all of this by Giannis, including going and getting Damian Lillard and letting Drew Holiday go. So he can't get mad about that. He's also injured. So like, I think that this is a situation where if this doesn't go well, whatever that looks like not going well, because again, I don't even think we've identified, what does not going well mean? Like, do they need to make the conference finals? Did they need
Definitely.
To make the, what needs to happen in order for us to say that this didn't go well? I think under more pressure are the Celtics, the team that you're fangirling over. I think they're under a lot more pressure. They're paying two players $500 million. They were in the NBA finals a pair of years ago, right? Like this is a team that needs to win and needs, and they're in Boston more than anything. I mean, the Bucks won an NBA finals just a couple of years ago. You can say what you want about, well, who they had to play or what that looked like or their path being easy. Didn't they win in 2021?
Yeah. Wouldn't you think that? I think that it's fair to separate these two kinds of pressures, one as franchise pressure and then one as future of the franchise pressure. And I think the Celtics fall in just the franchise pressure. Yes, there's never been a better opportunity for them as presently constructed. And then also how the East lays out. There are quite literally questions 2-8 in the Eastern Conference bracket right now. So as long as the Celtics can play like they played yesterday, I was at that game. I was there for Red Panda, by the way. I just so happened to catch a basketball game. She went 5-for-5, Elle. It was nuts.
Goated.
Franchise pressure, yes, but there's no threat or risk of, oh, if they fall short, the whole damn thing's going to blow up.
No, not at all. They can't. They just paid everybody.
Exactly. But there are legitimate questions with a lot of other teams in the Eastern Conference that if things don't go well this year, the whole damn thing could blow up. The Bucks, for example. You think if Giannis and Dame aren't happy, what about Donovan Mitchell? Okay, he's got a bum knee. He's balling like crazy in that game one win against the Magic. You have a ton of questions with the Sixers. All right, if the Sixers...
The Sixers, I'm with you, Gary, but the Cavs, like the Cavs were last year, like... Now, here's what I'll give you. Last year, the Cavs were like amongst the youngest teams. They make the postseason, but they're young, no expectation. They don't do anything. This year, they went from being the youngest team to like the 10th oldest team. That's how fast it happens. You know, you wake up and you're just the old person. But I still think that consistency is so imperative for Cavs post LeBron era. This is the first year they've had like some consistency year over year. And as you see, they're a 4 seed. So I don't think they're on as much pressure, but I'll give you the Sixers.
Cool. And then I also think I am going to go with the Cavs. Because again, this is a player-run league. So if Donovan Mitchell isn't happy, then at the very least, you can ruffle a whole lot of off-season feathers and create a whole lot of different conversation and different narratives for your standing, good standing or otherwise, within the franchise. And then, of course, the Miami Heat, they're going to get swept by the Celtics by all indications. So then what, right? Jimmy Butler, and again, I understand that all of these superstars, they're all signed to max contracts, but the point of sort of this topic of conversation is that all of those teams are battling injuries and internal questions, and the Celtics are battling none of that. So they are the only team that can get in their way in the Eastern Conference.
I feel you on that. I do think there are, like, for the Heat, they would be facing the same exact question that we were facing just a few months ago when they lost in the NBA Finals again. It was... Mm-hmm. What do you have to do to make this team a better team? Because last year they caught lightning in a bottle. They're a play-in team. And then of course they make the NBA Finals where they lose again. But if you are the Heat and you're again a play-in team and then you get swept or you lose in the first round, which is expected to the Celtics, then you clearly you're having a bit of a crisis of conscience. Are you getting rid of Tyler Hero, something that was unfathomable to them the last couple of off seasons for some reason? If the Bucks situation doesn't go well, then are you trying to get Damian Lillard to Miami, which was his preferred destination all along anyway? But I also think that there's a team facing a ton of pressure, franchise pressure, like the Celtics, but also pressure in terms of blowing this entire thing up. And that's the Suns to me.
Oh, hell
Right? Like you're talking about, if we go over to the West side, you're talking about a Suns team that was in the NBA Finals, right? Lose to those aforementioned Bucks. Then they lose in the Western Conference semis. Then they lose again in the Western Conference semis. And this is despite adding Kevin Durant, Bradley Beal. And you can say, especially last year, right? KD wasn't there full season. He was just sort of getting acclimated, figuring out the pieces. All told, they do, despite having sort of this three-headed monster, if you will, of like Bradley Beal, Kevin Durant, and Devin Booker, who, by the way, have played like 12 games together all year long. They have like 11 new players on that team. I mean, they've got a new coach and Frank Vogel. So, but I still feel like they're facing a ton of pressure because this is why Monty Williams was fired. He was fired for not being able to take that next step and get them to the glory land. And since he's been let go, they're getting worse. So I think they're probably facing more pressure than anybody.
With Kevin Durant, the last couple of years, I thought to myself, he definitely rents in terms of these cities that he goes to. He's there for such a brief amount of time. Like, he's not buying, all right? Because he's one of those guys who he'll be there for a season. He'll be there for two. And then for whatever reason, it's going to be a midseason trade. Or again, he went from Golden State to Brooklyn to Phoenix. He's just been like nomadic. And with the Suns, okay, they have an awesome mid-range game with their big three, who you just mentioned, have played 12 games, but they're going against right now a team that they have no other option with. They have no size. They can't stop Rudy Gobert or El Cato Grande. It is a glaring omission and view into the mismanagement of how they tried to construct this roster, in my opinion. It's not built for the playoffs where you have to have a big who can at least rotate on the Western Conference, who is freaking chock full of bigs who could ball.
Yeah.
And now you got a Minnesota Timberwolves team who have that twice down low. So my expectations, and I know a ton of our people at ESPN had way more expectations, or I guess they'd be less surprised if the Suns came out of that series against the Timberwolves. But me, I never really had high expectations for the Suns because of all of the question marks surrounding Kevin Durant going there anyway. It's like, okay, cool, you have those three, but then where does the scoring come from?
I would love to sort of see if this playoff run, and you can include like last year's as well with Denver, I would love to see if it forces us to have a truly existential question about is this era of just combining big giant superstars, at least for now, over, or how the approach will look, right? It's kind
yes.
of the same, right? It's kind of the same approach with like college right now, and like, what's a better approach, to sort of go to the transfer portal and build these super teams, or invest from within, build, grow consistency? Because, you know, if the Suns thing doesn't end up working, and to me, they've got to make the conference finals. Like, uh-huh. That is a bare minimum. The same could be said for the Clippers, right? They've got to make the conference finals, as much money as they spent trying to get, you know, Paul George and Kawhi Leonard together. And I just wonder if at some point they're going to go, it has been proven that it is much more about, as yes. to your point, building a playoff roster than just simply going and getting the most talented basketball players in the world to all play together. Because when's the last time that we saw that work? It was Kevin Correct. Durant at the Warriors 6 years ago. That's yeah. the last time we saw it work.
So I was on Hoopstreams yesterday, and this is, we actually ran out of time, but this is one of the points that I was going to make, was that I think the big three era in the NBA is done. I think it's been done for a while. I think guys like Luka Doncic and Nikola Jokic have proven why really all you need is like a big two, maybe a big two and a half. And then you have to have a deep bench. You have to have not an entire second unit, because that would be super hard and impressive. But the big three era to me has been done for a while. I mean, think about what we see in Dallas. It's Luka and it's Kyrie. What do we see in Denver? It's Nikola Jokic and it's Jamal Murray.
But a really solid Michael Porter Jr. too.
Correct.
Right? I mean, like he certainly would not be involved in a big three conversation.
Correct, exactly.
But you're right. Just a really dependent guy who can give you 15 to 20 whenever correct. Called on.
I mean, with the Celtics, it's Jaylen Brown and it's Jason Tatum. But then, I mean, they could legitimately have six all-stars on that team, right?
Sure.
Derek White starts, Drew Holiday, he's all defense all the time. The Heat, when they're healthy, it's Bam Adebayo and it's Jimmy Butler. Like, there are no more, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but there are no more, like, big threes. Jackson, he's a hoophead, one of our producers. Correct me if I'm wrong, but there really isn't like a big three that we're expecting much out of on either side. In Philadelphia, it's Joel Embiid and it's Tyrese Maxey. Let me see. Tyrese Halliburton and, God, is it Miles Turner?
And they're not being involved in a big three at all. Like, I think the
correct.
Whole point was this idea. When I think build big three, I think of a roster where specifically the parts were brought in
yes.
to create a big three, that the three-headed monster to a super team.
Bosh, I don't even Wade, think, James.
Right, exactly, yeah. Right? Like, I don't even think it's necessarily homegrown. Like, the correct. Warriors had a big three, but it was all yeah. homegrown. They drafted those guys. Like, they didn't sure. bring them in to assemble a super team. I yeah. mean, sort of this assembly of Avengers whole yeah. thing. I feel like that's over. Because, yes, there's definitely teams that have, like, a big three. I mean, even with the Bucks, right? Like, they technically have like a big three. Not the Bucks, T-Wolves.
You put Chris Middleton in there? Oh,
no, no.
Oh, okay.
The T-Wolves.
yeah.
Right? Like, they technically have a big three with like Rudy Gobert and Karl Anthony Towns and Anthony Edwards, yeah. but that was mostly homegrown with the exception of bringing Rudy in. So I feel like this will sort of be the final, you know, Kevin Durant always spearheading some of these like big three. Mm-hmm. It didn't work in Brooklyn. It didn't work in the Sixers when you tried to assemble this super team. It just hasn't worked. It
yeah.
didn't work in the Celtics when you tried to assemble this super team with like Kyrie Irving. It's just like none of it has been working.
It's a wrap.
Right. And I think it's probably a wrap on this, which I'm not opposed to. I was never one of those people that minded or cared or called anyone cupcakes because they chose championships and chose to chase rings. Like, that's the whole point. I mean, the whole point is you can't, on one hand, as the public at large, besmirch people, call asterisk people because they never won a championship. So can they really be great? And then on the other hand, criticize them for pursuing exactly that. So I have no problem with people trying to assemble these super teams and win. That's the point every single year. But I just don't feel like it's working at this point. Mm-mm. So I do think that takes a little bit of that player empowerment away that we've seen from some of the players who've been able to sort of force their hand, and these GMs that hold their nose, or these owners that hold their nose because they're like, oh, but for a championship, I'm willing to do anything. It's not really proven to be.
Yeah, it's a flawed method for sure. I mean, since the Warriors and then, you know, with the Heat, which was years before that, we really haven't seen a big three flourish for a sustained period of time in a while.
Exactly. So we'll see. I mean, listen, we're reacting after one round of one game in the first round of the playoffs. Uh-huh. Certainly there's more action as we tape this on a Monday, but we're going to take a quick commercial break. And then I'm going to lay out for you,
since we're
staying in the pressure cooker, a great note by our producers as well. Shredded chicken, something you have to crock pot for hours, 15 minutes in the pressure cooker. Good to go.
For real? And it stays juicy?
Oh, I'm telling you, you get the juiciness. It keeps all that in if you just put it in a pressure cooker. So while it's positive for that end, not positive in sports, we will tell you some of the people we think are facing the most pressure in sports at large. That's on the other side. Stick around.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. 10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Do you still get nervous when you do anything like SportsCenter or game day or anything like that?
I don't get nervous before I do SportsCenter. I do get nervous before I do some game days, just because of, like, I think in general, the live like environment still gives me butterflies. And I love that. I just, SportsCenter has become for me something that I do. It's so familiar. I do it so much. And there's like 25 exit routes. Like if you have a problem or an issue, there's so many contingency plans. When you're sort of in a live environment, there are fewer. So I do still get nerves, you know, before the national championship game. Yeah. Like, of course, I'm nervous before we, you know, come to the studio in halftime. But in general, I don't get nervous. I will tell you this, Gary, very humbling. As you know, you fancy yourself a stand-up at times when you want to. You do improv. You stand on a stage. You entertain people. You host things like I do. Getting on in front of people on a stage doesn't make me nervous at all. I feel very comfortable and at home. I love doing crowd work. I'm pretty good at improv. So none of that bothers me. However, This past weekend, I had to go to LA for the Festival of Books. I appreciate the LA Times for inviting me to come out. It was great. And I had to read my book on stage. And then like that was what I was going to do. So I get there though. And I'm like, you guys, my book's only like 20 pages. Like, it's not going to take 25 minutes to read. What am I supposed to do for the rest of the time up on stage? And they're like, whatever you want, crowd work, talk to the crowd, take questions, like whatever, it doesn't matter. And normally that's fine, but there is one crowd of people, one type of people that still give me nerves because I just don't really have a ton of jokes for their age group or appropriateness. And that's children. Children still make me nervous because I'm like, I can normally just, you know, talk my cuss, roast, like do whatever in front of adults. And like, they love it and they eat it up. But in front of children, it's like, I got to be clean. I've got to be on brand. I don't know what. And so I'm riding this high from hosting the Kids Bop concert for the for the national championship, which we talked about.
Kids, and that is something
the palm of my hand.
Something at the top of your resume. You were giving them some of those.
I was so proud.
Was it Bluey?
No, I was giving them Cocoa Melon. I was giving them Johnny. Yes, Papa. They were loving it. Like, we were vibing. Right. So I was riding the high of that. And I'm like, well, I can do this in front of this group of like 100 kids. That's fine. Like, it's all good. Cause I'm at the children's stage specifically. Yes. So these are all kids and parents. And it starts out okay. I'm like, shout out to all the parents who are only sitting in here right now, not because they care about my book, but because it's shady and they need a place to sit. They laugh, they raise their hand. I was like, cool, right? Like, I got the parents. Then I'm looking at the kids and I'm like, well, hey, kids. Crickets. I'm like, cool, all good. Let me go back to my bag of tricks from Cocoa Melon. So I was like, I need to see if y'all are out there. And I was like, Johnny. So finally this one dad like looks at me and he like feels so horrible for me. And he just goes, yes, Papa. And I was like, he gets it. And I was like, do I? Now, let me tell you this, Gary. Having been in this situation, should I have bailed or should I have just kept going through the rest of the Johnny song? Which one do you think I should have done?
No. Boom. You bail and be like, don't worry, kids. You'll get it next year. You know what I'm saying? You got to have those contingencies, right? How many kids were there, Elle? Because
like, kids,
their eyes, they cut like knives.
Yeah, they don't. They're tough. And so I finally I didn't bail. I kept going and a couple of other kids joined in once they saw what I was doing. And that made me feel a little bit better. But then I was like, time to read my book. And here's the other thing. My book is not like, you know, The Pigeon on the Bus. Like, it's not like for kids, like where it's silly and like they can joke around and laugh, right? It's like a more poignant book. It's really like a book for adults to read to their children. And then one day their children will understand. And so I'm like reading to them and it's just like, you know, I see like maybe a mom in the back crying, but that's it. And it's just crickets. And I've got great friends in the front, the Uffords. Shout out to the Uffords who were like watching and like cheering me on and making me feel a lot better than probably I should have in that situation. So I read the book and like, you know, everybody claps. And then it's just like, I got 12 minutes.
Damn.
I was like, anybody have questions? And I'll be damned if these little kids weren't adorable. They started asking questions. Now, some of them asked the same question in four different ways.
Perfect.
But it was really cute. And before I knew it, the lady was putting me out of my misery and she was like, your time is up. And I was able to get off the stage, but it was really humbling. I mean, for someone who's been a little bit on a roll, you know, people loving what they're doing, it was very humbling to be like, yeah, but to these kids, you still ain't
Damn. Kids really are like the ultimate test, right? Because even to their adults, and if you're an adult that is not a direct family member that they can't recognize, like, they don't know any better.
Yeah.
They don't know what to do.
No.
Oh, yeah. That just builds calluses right there, Elle.
It really does.
I'm right there with heart. You. Oh yeah. My gosh.
I know. It was brutal. So facing no pressure to
So support Elle and buy the book.
Please buy For You I Will, or I'm going to cry and have nightmares about all those kids staring at me. With laser eyes, just like, you're not funny. You're not injured. You have no puppets.
You got no puppets.
Next time I'm going to just start throwing candy into the crowd. I'm just going to
buy
them in love with sugar. Like I should have done. I should have gone with my instinct.
Works every time.
All right. So my instinct on some of these names on this, who's facing the most pressure on sports is to eye roll the out of this list. But instead I'm going to run through these names and I want you to tell me if this person is facing the most pressure. And then at the end, we will come to a catharsis on who of these names is facing the most pressure in all of sports.
Okay.
So the first thing I'm going to do is just run through all the names.
Okay.
Caitlin Clark to make a perfect transition to the WNBA.
Never heard
Ronnie
of
Ronnie to join his dad and perform well. Arch Manning to outperform the current quarterback, Quinn Ewers at Texas.
That's
and
the
play
one.
Really, really well. The Kentucky men's basketball's new head coach, Mark Pope. Oh my God, he's replacing Coach Cal. Simone Biles to make a dominant return to the Olympics. Dak Prescott to keep his job. Caleb Williams, because he has a pink cell phone, I don't know. Or Bill Belichick to get a new job and continue his legacy in football. Let's unpack it, Gary.
My initial blush, a lot of names probably deserving of being anointed, I guess, the most pressure-filled job. Can we work this in reverse order and just sort of eliminate names that I don't
think
fit? Let's do that.
Let's do that.
Let's work backwards. Get rid of Bill Belichick. Pressure for what? The dude's won a bajillion Super Bowls, okay?
Yeah, but even then, Gary, the dude is on Pat McAfee, like, just, like, smiling and trying to do this, like, new sort of analysis. Like, I'm a normal, regular guy. It sort of is reeking of, I'm tired of you guys hearing that I'm this, like, mean curmudgeon and I'm going to try and, like, show the world. Like, I smile, too.
Yeah, that's a heel turn.
It feels like he is feeling pressure. Because why do that if you don't care? Why do any of that if you're not trying to work your way back into the football sphere?
See, I think of it completely opposite. I just think that this is sort of his second act. We've seen this done with Alex Rodriguez. He was the biggest villain in sports. Everybody hated Alex Rodriguez. And then one day we all woke up and we were like, wait a minute. Alex Rodriguez ain't that bad.
Do we like him?
I think we do. So, listen, the heel turn is a lengthy process, but I think Bill Belichick, listen, you can't start a journey of 1,000 miles without taking the first step. And I think joining that Pat McAfee show and showing off them teeth, all right, maybe one of his first steps. So
like,
let's get
like him and Kawhi learning how to smile in as grown men has been really interesting journey.
Let's get rid of Bill Belichick just
right
from the jump. Because pressure. Some stuff's out of your hands. If nobody wants to hire you, nobody wants to hire, but you don't have pressure to get a job.
Then let me throw another name in there to throw out with Bill Belichick. Then you get Bill, I get Bronny. Full stop. This kid had a cardiac issue and barely played a full season at USC. I don't think there's any pressure, honestly. I really don't. I think there's no pressure at all. I think it's one of those people are going to take a flyer on him. They'll see if, you know, he can do something in the G League. I actually don't think there's any pressure. I don't think it has anything to do with his dad or any of those things. I find that this kid's not facing pressure at all. Maybe the business mind, maybe the people who are sort of plotting out this being his path, they're facing the pressure. Like, could this be a path for kids who didn't really catch on in college but didn't want to stay? Like, I think maybe that, like, the whole approach may be under pressure, but Bronny himself, I don't see it.
Oh, I think if you're the son of the chosen one, that at least has to make you the maybe desirable one. And we've seen this blueprint not work before, right? With both of Michael Jordan's sons who did play college basketball, but they didn't, I'd say they didn't amount to anything in the basketball space, but they obviously didn't reach the levels of success that his heirness achieved. Okay, I'll give you that one. Can we also get rid of then Simone Biles? And I say that to say there's no pressure, and people might not like this answer, but from the last Olympics, we've already established that there is an out, I guess, if there's a, and I'm not saying that like the twisties aren't a thing or like using mental health as a reason to not want to compete or not have the ability to compete, but that's obviously a reason that we've established is a credible one. If that's the reason that she doesn't perform in Paris. We've already anointed her as the greatest gymnast of all time.
Ever.
What more do you have to do to be like, yeah, for sure, we were right. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, she hasn't really competed in 3 years. This really makes her same thing. She came back after a couple of years off and she was like dominating at the Worlds. Like, she's really returned to form. She has in many ways. So maybe there's the pressure from her because she still feels like she can be a gymnast at a very high level. Certainly, if you want to come back to the Olympics, like, you've got something to prove to yourself personally. But to prove to us, to what? Like, You have given our country everything that you possibly could. We all good here. We straight. We solid. We square.
She ain't even the person facing the most pressure in her house, okay?
Correct.
Her husband, her husband better to make a name for himself before we literally just always remember him as Simone Biles' husband. Because I actually, the name is escaping.
Jonathan Owens.
Okay, I knew it was Jonathan. Okay, got it.
We get there eventually.
No disrespect. So no, Simone Biles off the list.
Yeah, Mr. Biles. Everybody is putting a ton of pressure on Caitlin Clark to transit. I don't even know what a perfect transition to the WNBA is. I think, you know, maybe the North Star there is getting WNBA Rookie of the Year, something that you could certainly see. She's got some tough competition, as you know, you already saw some of the really big names that came out with her. But I don't think she's under the same pressure everybody else does. It's like, oh, the pressure to carry the league, the pressure to do this, the pressure to do that. I mean, she's a rookie. Like, she's gonna have her stumbles. But the point is that, like, what she's already accomplished is why there's so much fanfare around her. And I understand that people want her to prove herself at this level. That's certainly what every single one of these athletes do when they go from amateur to the pros. Like, they want to prove themselves at that level. But I don't think anybody is ever ready to throw anybody out after 1 year, right? It's just because of who she is, because of perceived carrying a league on her back and perceived carrying, you know, this big shoe contract on her back and all of these things. But she's already getting rewarded for the things she's already done in this space. And I hope she's not feeling pressure to, like, win a championship this year. That's very unlikely, guys. That's very unlikely, okay? There's a reason that the Indiana Fever had the number one overall pick, because they were one of the worst teams, and they had Aaliyah Boston on their team, right? Like, they've got Aaliyah Boston, the reigning rookie of the year, a generational player, and they still weren't very good. So this is not, she's not, like, joining the aces, right? Like, and all she's got to do is help keep that dynasty afloat. Like, she's joining one of the worst teams in the league, and certainly they're going to instantly be better with her addition. But I think that this idea that there's all this pressure on Caitlin Clark, like, I don't think that that's fair. She knows she's going to have to grow and get better in this space. She knows that as well. But, like, let's give the girl some time to mature. I keep comparing her in terms of her closest comps to Kelsey Plum and Sabrina Ionescu. And we talked about on the last podcast, it took them a few years in order to be all-stars. It took a few years to sort of understand the rigors and the style of play and the things that benefited you or worked for you in college being different. But also, let's not forget that she gets better teammates as well, right? Like, she's got a professional team around her as well. So really interested to see how it all plays out, but I'm throwing her out too. So that gets to the people that I think we do think are facing some pressure. And the person on the top of my list,
Dak,
is, yeah, I'm with you. It's Dak
Prescott. Yeah, we get Coach Pope out of there, all right?
I don't think he's
he shouldn't have made the list.
He's got no pressure. Nobody wanted that damn job. He's like, you're welcome.
Like, I was y'all's seventh choice.
Correct.
All right.
Right. I ain't feeling no pressure. Y'all settled on me. I know that. I'm not going to try to keep myself up. You didn't want me.
Okay.
You had to have me. You did not want me. And so there's no pressure there.
I was your sixth best option. I'm not going with Arch Manning. Okay, which one are you going to go with? Because I actually, based off of the definition of how we define sports pressure, I think I didn't want to go with Caitlin Clark because we've just been talking about her so much and it's just been so much attention. But now that I look at this list and we're breaking each of these selections down, I think I do have to go with Caitlin Clark. And I'll make this quick, but I will just say, when you look at pressure, what does that mean? It's all of the outside responsibility that is now closing in on you, that's relying on you, whether it be monetarily, professionally, with the actual league. With some of these other players like Bronny, there's no outside responsibility to perform. There's pressure internally because of the name that you carry. But Caitlin Clark is going to be feeling pressure this year because the shoe deal, and look at the numbers and look at the money. So it's not necessarily pressure for her game. Her game will eventually, to your point, translate. She'll build up, she'll get better. But there is a ton of outside pressure, and a different word for pressure is responsibility, to keep all of that momentum going in the right direction. And she is the leader of this pack that's sort of taken a long time to develop. And there's been so many women and awesome trailblazers that came before her, but now all of a sudden the game has reached this level. She's taken the baton and she's got all of that responsibility to go forward with.
That's fair. That's a totally fair assessment. I feel you there. I'm kind of settling on Dak because I actually don't think Arch is the one facing all of the pressure. Mm-mm. I think Texas is, you know, I think his coach is. Like, I think, right, it's Sark that's facing all this pressure. You've got Quinn Ewers, who took you to the playoffs last year, but everybody wants Arch Manning. They want him because of the name and for all the other reasons, because you seemingly hit the lottery when he decided to come to Texas. He wanted to work with Sark. He's a Manning. He's a Manning. He's a Manning. And he played so well in his first Texas spring game, and he had 3 touchdowns. And I said this last year on this very podcast, Gary, that for Texas, they wanted nothing more than Quinn Ewers to decide to go to the NFL draft and move on. That's what they wanted. And someone said, are you crazy? He took him to a postseason. I was like, yeah, but they don't want to have to make this decision. They don't want to have to go with the guy who we kind of already know what his ceiling is. Like, he's a solid quarterback. Is he a quarterback that's going to do enough to help you win a natty? Clearly not. They were right there. But is he better than Peyton Manning's nephew, Arch Manning? Who knows? And like, they are facing, I think, a ton of pressure. Arch himself is not. Someone looked at me when I said, I just don't understand, like, how Arch is going to leave. Like, why would he not leave if Quinn Ewers is the guy? How many of these dudes do you know are willing to sit behind someone for 2 years? Like, they aren't. It really doesn't happen, right? Like, look at Joe Burrow. He had to leave. He moved. He left. He came to LSU. I just don't see it. And they said, what if Arch Manning is just really not that good yet? And he doesn't have the ability to say, I'm going to go wherever I want and instantly start because he's not ready to start. And I said, okay, that's great, but he's Manning. So he was born with that ability, right? And I think, to my point, Texas is the one facing this pressure. You pick Quinn Ewers, the known commodity, and then Arch Manning potentially leaves and out goes all of that attention and the whatnot and the pedigree and everything. Or you go with Arch. He's not ready. You potentially speed bump his career early on. And then you bench a guy in Quinn Ewers who helped get you there to a playoff a season ago. Then you have to go back to him enticing you when he's on the bench. Like, that's not great either. So I think they're facing a ton of pressure, probably even more than Dak.
Yeah, I could rock with that. It's all on Sark. It's all on Texas. And Arch Manning, it's not a dude that like needs cash. So
he's good.
He doesn't have to force any sort of manipulation in that degree, I guess. It's already coming to him.
So Dak Prescott, then, we agree, is the man in sports right now facing the most pressure because, of course, they could extend him and rework his deal. They really could use the money back and the cap hit. They're trying to, the Cowboys, of course, trying to pay a bunch of people right now. They could do that and it would help them. They refuse to do that, at least for now, because they're still not totally sure on Dak, it looks like. And I think that's a fair assessment in terms of, they've already given him a couple of big contracts, but in terms of, are you going to put him in that Patrick Mahomes money? Are you going to give him that kind of money? You know, the answer is, we'll see. And he's got a lot he's got to show this year. And I think that is not only winning a playoff game, I think that's making it to the conference final.
Second in MVP voting last year. And I know on our sports centers, we talked to the different insiders and analysts. A lot is going to hinge on how the Cowboys perceive Dak Prescott on Thursday, first round of the NFL draft. We've had some draft analysts on our shows saying that the Cowboys might look at taking a quarterback as early as the third round. So, and remember, I'm not saying that he's going to be some incumbent starter, but they traded for Trey Lance. They got him for cheap money. He's on the bench. If the Cowboys go and get a quarterback they want to develop, or at least at the very least sort of ignite something, some sort of competition, some faux pressure under Dak Prescott, we'll find out Thursday, or at least this weekend, with what the Cowboys do.
Speaking of Thursday, we're going to have a super fun NFL draft show for you. And so because of that, we will not be doing the podcast on Thursday. We're going to wait until at least the first round is over. So we will have a podcast for you, a new fresh potty on Friday.
And we're going to Miami next week.
We're going to F1 next week in Miami, where we'll be hanging with the elite. Gary will be down there on the paddock stalking. It's much better for you to go to Florida and stalk celebrities than children like you were doing at Disney World. So I love the growth here.
First of all, you were the one reading to them all weird. Like, they weren't even your kids.
I know. They were like, what's happening here? This lady's a weirdo. She keeps trying to tell jokes. She keeps doing chants. Let me tell you, the people that don't know Johnny were like, is she in a cult? Why is she doing this
for real
in response to my children? Like, who's Johnny? Why are you saying open your mouth, ma'am?
What is this Jerry Jones impression she keeps doing? It's actually a Hemsworth brother.
So, so programming alert, we will have a fresh potty for you on Friday afternoon at some point when we get it posted. And I think that's it for Gary Strinsky and L. Duncan. This has been The L Duncan Show. We will see you on Friday. Oh, and remember to rate, review, subscribe, and tell everybody about our potty, because we do it, yes, for each other, but also
all of that.
People will listen. Thanks.
And watch.